Hi, welcome, Julia. Julia, you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. I'm going to introduce you now. You, Julia Landgren Rodriguez, and you've written this book that you would like to talk about and also make the connection to what's happening in Mexico right now. And I'll let you start off. See, get coordinated here. And tell us about the book that's in process or the as much as you've done. I think you said that you're still editing it, but I haven't talked to you much about that. Sorry about this technical stuff here going on. There, microphone.
Okay.
All right.
So the series of the land grab books that I started have still just been unfolding, and I came from Santa Cruz to work on my Billy the Kid book 3 years ago. And that book just ended, but I found another character I really wanted to dedicate a whole book to, and that's Carla Varela of Mexico. She was the last Empress of Mexico. She was in a bad timing in a sense, but she's the main character in my book called The Fall of the House of Mary and Blackberry and The Division of the Star. And the book was basically a homage to her, but it got carried away with the men that were involved in her life. And the most interesting thing about Carla Varela is that she was raised here, born and raised here, so she's quite a character to New Mexico. Her collections are here in Mesilla, where I am, and as you know, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo that ended the Mexican-American War was signed here, too.
Right.
She was basically, she's the daughter of who I call Marion Blackberry, and what I'm translating is the Cabeza de Vaca house. I'm talking about the fall of the house of Cabeza de Vaca. And there was a conspiracy around her birth. She was born in 1874. And there was a conspiracy well orchestrated that was going to help the land grabs unfold in a more, I guess, controlled fashion. Because the more I look at the land grab history, and I have the land grab titles in front of me, and I want to talk to you about the grantee and the claimants and these 15 families that basically have all of these lands that went up in smoke when Mexico ceded more than half of its territory to the United States. So there's these conspiracies around the use of the women that are on the land grants because there's a matrilineal succession of land titles. And so these women, for example, Carlota's grandmother, she's one of the first ones to go missing in 1848. And that's right when the Mexican-American War ends. Well, you think it ends, but it really takes a covert turn.
Yes. Well,
and her father also is a victim of this, and that same year, he's kidnapped. He's just a young boy. But her, let me tell you who she is so you can get an idea of,
please.
On the idea of who these people are. So she was the daughter of Marie Sophie of the Prit of the Pendragons, a granddaughter of the Hessen Kessel of the Landgravites, you know, and we have the Hearst Castle here. And Carlota, one of Carlota's fake identity is that of Julia Morgan. It's a forgery that it was built in 1905. That's just not true. The Hessen Kessel is a much older house of Landgravites that are here when this part of New Spain is a French vassal under Vespania in 1789. And so these are the early years of this woman that I'm working on, which is Carlota's grandmother, and all my books basically have dealt with her. She's famous to us as Julia Armstrong, but she's the real mother of George Hearst and of J.P. Morgan Chase. And these little boys are her children that actually go missing when she disappears. And so I've kind of given a homage to looking at her history and what happened to her. She was a half-sister to Maximilian of Mexico. Maximilian was the last emperor of Mexico. He was born in 1808. He likes to extend himself into the late 1700s, but he's really from 1808, and she's from 1803. So that gives us George Hurst and J.P. Morgan are born in the 1830s. And there's one little boy that goes kidnapped in that same year. But Carlota's father, who I call Marion Barry, because Barry in Latin is vaca. It's not cow. So when we translate the Cabeza de Vaca expeditions up the Camino Real in New Spain, these caravans like of De Anza and Oñate, the Francisco Jimenez de Cisneros expeditions, these are people that are coming after the conquest of Granada into New Spain, so early 1500s. And these guys aren't discoverers. They're actually traders in the lives of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, who has tabs on Mexico. And so when Oñate comes, I'm right now on the Oñate Trail, and they're large land grants that belong to her family. Well, it's partially their kidnapped children and the grandmother who goes missing. Mm-hmm. So Carlota's life, I decided to dedicate a book to her. It's called The Fall of the House of Mary and Blackberry, and then The Division of the Star, because I'm trying to talk about the geopolitical and the strategic locations of the Camino Real in terms of it's the heart of Mexico. Even the word Mexico comes from belly button connected to the moon, and there's these old rivers that actually come all the way up, which are the Rio Grande or the Rio Bravo. And before the Gadsden Purchase, there was another river that they argue moved, but they acquired Gadsden in 1863. It was the last piece of Mexico to be ceded to the United States, but it was an actual breach of a river. The river didn't actually move. The river was breached and many things were broken down. So I'm here studying in Doña Ana. It's the territory that extends all the way to Sonora. It was called the San Antonio Land Grant. And that's San Antonio de Béjar, or Santa Antonieta de Béjar. It's actually a reference to Princess Antonieta of France. But, you know, they've genderized male, and they've kind of disconnected any French or Portuguese or any other Austrian or, you know, Mexican history is very distorted at this point, and so is the American history.
Mm-hmm. And it's because of this distortion that people are not up on what is really going on and what's come before, so that we have what's California today and what's you know.
Yeah, we don't think about California in terms of the loss to the land grant. So in the book, what I'm trying to deal with Carlota is the characters in her life to really make them. To really bring them to life. Her children were born in the 1900s, in the early 1900s, and that's time enough to know your great-grandparents, so she's not that far away in history. And she was written down, and you know, by somebody who really forged history, that's the Emperor Maximiliano Luna Zavala y Sáenz. So he's the last name that's found on the Doniana and Sandoval, New Mexico territories in 1803 and 1808. And he goes down in history as one of the main traders of Mexico. He's a contemporary of the President Santa Anna, the nine-term President Santa Anna. And these two men, along with like John Quincy Adams and Andrew Jackson, et cetera, they wreak havoc on what's Mexico after the American Civil War. So we go straight into the Lincoln County Wars, and Carla is born 4 years prior.
Mm-hmm.
So my books that started in Santa Cruz on the Magnolia Rose, you know, which is the old Capitola Hotel, whenever the capital was still in Capitola of the Red Collars, when New Spain and the ports and the navies were very strong at that time. Then the movement after the loss of Texas and California in 1832, the movement of the capital comes to the Hacienda Nacional, which was here in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And it's a building that's been deconstructed, and the history is largely lost. It was inside a park they call Apodaca, and Maximilian was on those titles. And before that, there to the family Ferrer Durán de Armijo. And you can trace them all the way back to the, oh, well, it's just very important families that are part of the Duke of the Infantas during Isabel of Castillo, the time of Portugal. So there's a whole lost Portuguese history. There's a whole lost, you know, the Muslim history of Spain is lost. And Carla's kind of born to unite these big houses. So her father's side, grandmother comes from a Celtic house of Pendragon, and that's where Hearst has his landmine titles. And then her mother is a Celtic, her mother is a Hinds heiress, but who also doesn't survive, because Maximilian, as an emperor of Mexico, they already have in a long time period been taking women captive. So they've had all these lines of the women kind of as captives in their lives. And Carla was written in as his wife. So in official history, Carlota of Belgium, they call her Carlota Maeses. She's written in as the wife of Maximiliano Luna, the last emperor of Mexico, this traitor. But he was 70 years her senior. So those are forgeries of history. And she lived as a captive of the famous Charles Maxwell, who acquired 2 million or more acres of the San Antonio land grant. And also he's the famous Henry Cowell, who donated University of California Santa Cruz land.
Yeah.
So she was a captive of him. He was born her same year. But they just used her to have, you know, all her children were taken from her, basically, and her life was just controlled by men. And the main conspiracy began in 1874 in the Magnolia Rose Mansion in Capitola. And there's an actual hotel roster, a sign-in list, where these men sign in. It's a little hard to disambiguate, but I did actually publish parts of the list, kind of get in trouble for it, because they're all the same families that are on the land grants today. It's Forbes and Oppenheimer and all of these families that are consolidated. They look like 15 families, but they're actually just slight forgeries on the same families, and they go through the Hearst to the Bureau of Land Management, and then they go into the families that are claiming them. And so those are the land grants of Juliet Armijo, and that was Carlota's grandmother who was the first one to kind of disappear. But what's interesting is that I've been looking closely at the man who's on the forgeries, because she should have been the one on the forgery. So they replace her with somebody who's actually not real. And that name is over and over as the one granting the land grants. And he turns out to be just a fake stand-in for somebody who's involved in the Mexican Revolution and also is an enemy of Pancho Villa. So then the Villistas got dragged into the picture, and the book had to totally be rewritten. So that's kind of what I'm doing right now, is trying to contextualize her life as a contemporary of Pancho Villa and the revolutionaries such as Zapata and Gil and Obregón.
Oh, okay. What year was Pancho Villa born?
So Pancho Villa was born in 1883. And they put him at 1878, which is to mix up his date with his half-brother. And this is the other part of history. History is very distorted. So just like American history after the 1850s, it's quite, you know, it's very wrong. It doesn't give us anything that's actually correct. It's the same thing with Mexican history. There's a lot of distortions in history. And the one that's so clear to me right now, the more I study, is that Pancho Villa actually attacked here, where I am on the border in El Paso, Texas, and Mesilla. It wasn't in Columbus where he's displaced to. Part of the forgeries are to displace them into these, you know, to lessen the significance of the land. The old border, his mother had ranches here, his grandfather did too, but they displaced him into Oaxaca. So that kind of connects in what's going on with the teacher strikes down there, because part of what was going on at the time was the change in agrarian reform, and, you know, Mexico didn't want an imperial family anymore. So there were general upheavals, but like in every revolution, they're using the people's movement, the energy, to kind of steal the revolution. And that's kind of what's happened. If you know, like the PRI in Mexico has been in power ever since the assassination of Pancho Villa. But what they do is we have Vicente Fox that was in there a short time period. But, you know, Fox is, the name goes to Fouché or Boucher. He's actually a descendant of Bush and aligned to Pat Garrett. you know, so there's never been a loss of power in the since that time. So more than almost 100 years of the same political party in Mexico. And in these last midterm elections that they're involved in right now, there's already been like 12 killings or 12 assassinations. Let me see how 20 some people. Wait, I wrote it down. Let me see where it is. 21 people so far linked to the elections have been killed. And they're just midterm elections, you know, so it's not, the president's not up for a re-election. It's the Chamber of Deputies, the lower Congress. There's 500 seats up for election. And there's 17 governors up for election. And it's the first election since Mexico has implemented their reforms. Those reforms are that they want teacher evaluation, so the teachers are up in arms. Well, they say, but you see, there's a lot of propaganda. The same thing is because the disappearance of the students in the state of Guerrero, Iguala, where also the leader of the mayor candidate there was from a party right now that's also running. That's the, I think it's the PRD party. So it's really distorted. But the links of that to the Villista revolution is that those things were the same. There were teacher revolutions, there was agrarian revolution, and they were the people that were joining the troops were being promised also agrarian reform, and there's a lot of animosity towards the landholders. They were large landholders. This is the landholding of Hearst and J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan is born in 1832. He's not that man that they show that looks like a Christmas man with the blonde beard and fat. That's a forgery over who he was. He was actually, his last name comes from Morgan Castro Urraca, and they were on their Portuguese that were on the Sonoran land grants. His mother was on the land grants. And when he went missing, his uncle kidnapped him, and that's Maximilian of Mexico, the emperor. So he already had like an agenda on how he did things. He actually helped disappear his own sister, which is Juliet Armijo. Those are the Durán de Armijo. Durán means hardened, and that's a reference to like the city of gold in the domes of the old mosques. So like when you eat your Dorito, that means hardened, but Durán is the word for hardened. It just means like the hardened rock.
Mm-hmm.
And de Armijo just means her children,
right.
The children of the hardened rocks.
Oh.
And these are references to the infantas, and they're an old. They're, from there come all kings and queens. If you actually trace them, you can find the Angevin links to them too, and then they move right into the English kings and queens and the Tudors and the Langrevites, and then we're in the 16th century. So those are all histories that are kind of lost because the Camino Real is 4,000 years old. So we have a whole history that's lost. But they were large landholders. So with Pancho Villa, the history is it's just so tied up in hers. And with what's going on right now is we have in Mexico the very similar things happening. So Villa was in line for the presidency of Mexico. He was the governor of Chihuahua in 1913. He was the governor of Chihuahua in 1914, and his grandfather was the president of Mexico, an emperor of Mexico. They don't tell the true relationships because people that are in line for those types of roles don't raise their own children. Very often their children get other names or they're raised by aunts or cousins. They're moved around just to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same thing with Villa, like even his name, Pancho Villa, or they say Francisco Villa. That's not even his name. Francisco comes from his grandfather, and Villa comes from Vela or Varela, which is also Wella or Wells, like Indian Wells. But Villa's real name is, through his mother, he's Diaz, Varela Diaz, and through his father, they're related to the Santísima Trinidad. So the Santísima Trinidad goes all the way back to Santa Ana. He was a triplet, and he was also a 9-time president of Mexico. He had two twin sisters. One of those twin sisters also had triplets. She's the mom of Pancho Villa. So Pancho Villa mother was a triplet, and his uncle is Santa Ana. So there are all these inside, very tight breaks in the revolution and within the families. And that's the hard thing to understand, is the actual transition of power. They don't really move that far. Power's not moving that far. And the more you look at the people that hold it, and if you go even back further, you can see that they've even held it longer. So if you look, for example, the Cardinal Pedro Gonzalez de Mendoza, he was in the cadet line, and he went clergy. He wasn't military, but this is the line that I'm telling you of the Santissima Trinidad. This means the Sacred Trinity. So there's these triplet births, and even Pancho Villa had triplets that got kidnapped in 1918. So it's a complicated story. It can go on and on, because the people that kidnapped his children are landholders to this day. And it was the grandmothers that were listening. And it's women behind these revolutionaries. And that's the strangest thing. The more I look at it, the more I see the women are involved in it, the mothers and the grandmothers. They're the ones pushing these youth. Pancho Villa was bipolar probably by the time he was 20 and was stressed out big time. The reality of him is he didn't do anything without his mom or brother behind him.
Jeez. it's good. So anybody that's researching this would have to do a lot of digging. They wouldn't uncover this by opening any history book right now.
No history book right now. There'll be all distortions and slight separations. It's not, there's partial truths and partial edits. And because all information is now electronic, it's so easy to validate stuff that's not reliable as a source of information. So you have to be able to, I spend a lot of time looking at data, and I have research assistants that speak multiple languages and that have the skills too in research, that we spend a lot of time looking at the data we can find, and it's not easy to find the black history data, you know. The black history is gone. The black history even of the Greeks is gone, and this is the Spanish history, the indigenous history of the Infantas, the Dukes of the Infantas, you know, Diego Huerta de Mendoza. These are the Portuguese ladies in waiting that are the time of Rodrigo Díaz de Vivar, Mendoza, and these are the time of Philip II of Spain, and they're holding all this land we're on. So these are histories that are lost, wars that are lost, but families that are still holding power and also holding the key to information. And that's kind of how it was. It's a key to information and inside information. So they placed Pancho Villa's death in 1923, and the person in presidency in Mexico in 1923 was Álvaro Obregón. And Obregón turns up to be one of the most interesting characters so far. I'm amazed at his life. He's so many people. He was so many things to so many people. And that's a strange concept to consider. So the same thing with Carla. She was so many things to so many people. Now, what does that mean? It means that they did actually have various identities, and they did fill in as different people in different roles because of the power that they had and played.
But they had people that prompted them to do these things, or that you said mm-hmm. they were stressed out, so they had to have some kind of...
She was completely pushed. Her birth, her mother was killed right after her birth, and they thought that her mother was going to be able to escape the mission in Carmel. Her mother was actually captive in a mission there in Carmel, Monterey, California, in Mexico. She was born in 1844, and she only survived until Carla's birth in 1874, so she died young. And there was already this ritual, and it's an awful one, but they're waiting for the child of the heir. And they're like, they killed the mother, and I see that happening over and over. But Carla came to New Mexico during the Lincoln County Wars in 1877, and she was only 4 years old, but her birth was already planned, and it was a strange concept, too. The more I looked at it, it's very strange. But it was to have a legitimate black child heir to rule the country, because, you know, Mexico had just yielded the largest part of its territory, and they were going to cover up the indigenous Spanish, Moorish, and Celtic, and Austrian, and every other thing that's on the Rio Grande. It's a lot of Jews, Germans, it's Mennonites. You know, the Rio Grande and the southern Rio Grande, and these roads are so ancient. They lead right from where I am to where you are.
Ah.
They're so special, these routes, and where they are on the map geopolitically. So we're the belly button to Mexico as the center of the water systems. You know, more than 50% of all Mexico water is up here. And, well, the rivers are dry now. They're dry as a bone. And the main breach of the river was a horrible event. But, you know, the road goes from here all the way up there. And those were the main ports that were lost in 1832. Those are the ports of the Marineros. So that's the old Bahía de los Marineros that's there that they barely fixed up. And then the other one is the port San Antonio de Béjar, which is right here. Because when Oñate came, they could travel by water. And he came with the granddaughter of Montezuma. You know, there was water systems. Now the water's dry as a bone. They're not coming by water anymore. But they actually breached the river to gain the Gadsden Purchase. Mm. And they opened and drowned a city, and that's Doñana. And that's another lost history, because the Doñana history, they say from 1642 is when they did the plans for the city. And you can actually, you know, read the history of the person who wrote the plans for the city of Doñana and for the Mosque of the Santa Maria that they broke. It was broken sometime in 1880. But those histories are lost, and actual cities were drowned. And those are histories that are not told in Doñana, and I'm studying them. So I'm on the sites looking at the old map, looking at the routes of the river. You can look at these through Google Earth, to Google Earth Maps. And there's also, we use census data. We use the 1870 New Mexico census. And we also have the artifacts from the museums. So we try to use primary resource-based data, but it's probably a small audience because it's very complicated information.
Yeah. So you have research assistants, and so the ones that do all this laborious examination, you know, aren't the average person. I mean, it really takes someone dedicated.
True. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The people that are dedicated actually turn out to be quite invested in the discovery of the information. So one of the persons that works for me, mother, was raised in the same household where the children were kidnapped from Pancho Villa, and those are the Baca family, and they're large landowners, and that's who I'm talking about, the fall of the house of Marion Blackberry, the black Baca, kind of like the black sheep. That's what I'm playing with, the idea of the black sheep.
Oh, right.
And he conspired, and that's Carlota's father. And if he didn't conspire, probably a lot of people wouldn't have lived, because he did save a lot of lives, but they compromised the main women's lives. So the Baca family, that's an interesting family to follow, because Cora Gurulay and Kermit Roosevelt. So Kermit Roosevelt had a sister, too, who was a Baca. And then she has a son who's a Baca. And they're just recycling money over and over into the old house of Roosevelt, the old Roosevelts. Here they're called Ross, Reese, Cross, Gross. It's all the same family. So it was the time of Roosevelt, kind of. And Roosevelt really aided the loss of Mexico. And the same thing with him, you know. He was raised by someone else, and his mom was kidnapped when she was 21. And that's what's happening in Mexico. So when you think about the location of the kidnapping, it happened, the 43 students that are missing in Mexico from the state of Guerrero and Iguala.
Right.
They call the plan of Iguala. That's where actually the emperor of Mexico, Agustin Iturbide, and the famous, like, José María Morelos, they wrote the plan to separate Mexico from Spain. That's where it was drafted.
So that the explanation for those missing students was that some of them they thought was found. But when I interviewed Al Rojas recently, who has studied lots about Mexico, and his background is his family's from Mexico. That they aren't the actual students. The ones that saying that they'd found their remains. Turn out that's not even. And is that what you found out to be? That this is
missing. Yeah, they're not
students.
The parents came through here, so I got to meet them in their caravan, and they believe there's no evidence so far, so they haven't been able to locate them. And if you look historically at indigenous legends, it's really crazy and strange because there's a lot of patterns in the old indigenous stories of colonization and kidnapping of children like that, taking of large numbers of children from schools. That happened a lot in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And if you think about like what just came out in Canada with all the indigenous children being forced to residency homes and being removed, they did that a lot, and what they were doing was they were, you know, making them conform to whatever. And I still
royal
see
families,
that happening.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's no evidence that the children have been killed. But what that sparked was so much disturbances because these right now in Mexico, these midterm elections are the first election since the disappearances.
Oh, yeah.
So the people are really coming out to talk about it, but the media is radicalizing teachers so that the militias can come out and create this kind of image of a radical teachers, kind of like it's a perfect timing to shift blame, you know, to say, wow, radical teachers from there, you know, so they are armed groups. So they're saying that the teachers burned 116,000 ballots. And how are they armed? It's armed groups that burned them. But they're saying, you know, that's a radical teacher. So you have to take everything that's kind of going on down there with salt because they can manipulate the reality. And they have killed the candidate for the Morena party. So let me tell you which parties right now are up. There's the Morena is one of the parties running against the PRI. They only have about 8%, but they're the leftists. And it's interesting because they come out saying the Morena means the dark girl. And it really has a ring to it in a sense. The other party, the PRD, they have about 17% of the seats in the Senate. 99 out of 500 of the Chamber of Deputies seats are up right now. And they're called the Social Democratic Reform. And they're running some candidates. And they're playing a lot with colors. So it's kind of weird how it's up. It's kind of almost white or black is the game. And the Greens are saying, the real Green Party is already absorbed in the PRI. So you can't look at the Greens like if they're Greens in our sense of we look at the Greens like in San Francisco. So the Greens, they're already absorbed in the main party. So the Greens don't count as Greens, but the kind of leftist guys are La Morena and the PT, and then there's the PAN, which is the right center. So those are the parties right now. So, but they killed the mayor of Querétaro, and he was the Morena candidate for the Chamber of Deputies. And then they killed Hector López Cruz, which was the pre-candidate for the city council in Humimanguillo. Can't pronounce it. They killed him on May 14th. And then I just read yesterday that they opened fire on another girl's car. I don't know. I was going to write it down, but I didn't. And also Miguel Ángel Luna, the mayor of the Valle of Calco, they killed him. And so this is kind of what was happening, too, for Pancho Villa in terms of the lineup for him coming into the presidency. And if there's any pattern at all in it, if to look at the 1928, the 1923, they say the assassination of Villa was in 1923, but I swear it's 1928, is that for Pancho Villa was an inside job. You know, they were his half-brothers. And there were these women, like you said, there was this pressure. There was these old-timers operating behind them. And they were women who had learned from the men some really bad stuff. Yeah, it's kind of scary looking at what the grandmothers were doing. Well, right now with the teacher union, in Mexico, they're trying to appease them. So they called off the strike. So they called off the evaluations. So they actually had tried to implement reform, but the civil groups are so upset that the government said, sorry, never, never, never mind, it's postponed. And then the business people are mad now, and now the elections take place tomorrow, and they're already pulling out the Mexican military on the people. So to me, it kind of looks like a really well orchestrated, because you know, Oaxaca down there in the south, there is a revolutionary movement that's led under the Zapatistas, but there's no, I don't see any reference to that in these things, in these documents.
And would there be reference to that?
He had been the leader of the Zapatistas now is Gallano. I should have made some notes on him, Gallano. And he's the replacement for the subcomandante Marcos.
Yeah.
And he hadn't been out seen in a year. And he just came out, which is, you know, I don't know a lot about it. Most things I have to go in and inform myself or follow, but I was surprised to see him come out. And no, I haven't seen anything that they're blaming the Zapatistas for anything. it's I don't know. The scandals in Mexico are crazy. Gas has lost 25% in the price of oil. The peso's fallen to 16% against the dollar.
Huh?
You know, it's...
Yeah.
The gas is getting cheaper, but and the election violations are rampant, like nobody's ever seen this before. And the propaganda and the news media, they don't care, they just pay the fines. You know, it's like, go ahead and break the rule, don't matter, we're rich enough to pay the fines.
Well, does this pertain to... Does our border control pertain to all this relationship with Mexico, do you think?
Well, if you think about when the Plan Merida began, that's the year 2006, and that's when all the political assassinations, the kill lists, and the drone use, and the disappearance began in Mexico. We fund that little charade you see down there. We send them their dancing clothes, their dance clothes, their little hats and their little mittens. We give them, I don't know, millions of dollars every year for Plan Merida. It's like the Plan Colombia, and it was to fight the drug war, but you know, they had other things to do. They armed themselves, they funded intricate interrelationships and corporate relationships. It's like corporatism to the max. They have the perfect excuse for state-sponsored terrorism, which is blame the gangs, and you know, it's so sophisticated. It's not what it looks like, you know. What the gang looks like with all those marks on their face, etc. And it's not what the face of it looks like. It's very interesting. The overlap with Pancho Villa would be is that. They were trying to also make agreements with the Mexican workers. And so, for example, in 1925, Mexicans didn't have an 8-hour workday. So, to tell you the truth, the salary's the same. So Mexico is in so much trouble right now because the salary's the same as in 1923 for the workers. So the revolution was lost. There was no land redistribution. It was a land grab. And what I'm writing about are the land grabs here of New Mexico and Sonora and California. And they were trying to appease the revolutionaries by offering the Mexican workers these appeasements such as, you know, Sundays off in an 8-hour workday. And so they did get that. But they got where Obregón was an insider and he would shift sides. And he's one of my main focus right now. I don't even know how to start to explain him. He was the president during Pancho Villa's assassination, and he was always competitive with Villa as a candidacy for the presidency. And with Obregón, if I told you who he was and who he overlaps with in the data, you wouldn't believe me. it would take me a long time for me to prove to you what I need to say about Obregón. But Álvaro just means the boy, el varo, the boy, the small one. And obra means history, and gone means gone. So his whole name is just a forgery over a prior identity. So Álvaro, that means the man, obra, gone. Like abra, cadabra, gone. And his daughter was Eleanor Roosevelt. So she was one of the Vaughns, and that's where the name Obra or Vaughn.
Oh my gosh.
These were people that were so intricately connected with the Roosevelts, and history just unfolded like a hand in glove with the Hearst helping them, Phoebe Hearst helping them, George Hearst as a brother to Carla's dad. So George Hearst wasn't born named George Hearst. That's also a forgery, and they take the name from a man they killed, George Castro, in 1838. He died in 1863. He was born in 38, and he's Roosevelt's real father. And those are placeholders for children that were kidnapped. They were raised to be rulers. These children were raised to rule, to run empires. And their histories are forged. They got to write their own history. Those little Nova performances on the Roosevelts, you could just go and wash that up and it would dissolve right like jello. None of it's real. Partial is real, partial is not true. For example, Alice Roosevelt, where he says his mother was that name and that she passed away. Or it's his wife, his first wife. It's actually his mother. So there's partial information, just distortions of roles, social roles. And then there's also linguistic games. And we're, as a literate culture, we like the literary world. We think, well, it's written down, must be true.
Yeah.
And they forged so much after 1880. So after the Gadsden Purchase was political appointments, the Lincoln County Wars. You can't find anything straight in history. After 1890 forward, everything's basically washed off. And then you have the territories becoming states in 1912. And these are what Villa's fighting against. His mother's land is on this side of the border. He's not coming to attack Columbus. He's coming to attack right here, Doña Ana. And it's critical. It's more critical than anybody can imagine. It's not just their land ranch, but there's the Hacienda Nacional. The National Palace of the Nation was here. It was destroyed. They said that the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was signed in 1948. They say it's 1953 to 1963, and that's signed in Mesilla. But it wasn't. There's no buildings there. Mesilla is also largely deconstructed. There was an adobe palace of the nation, where Santa Ana had his land grants, his mother's land grants, and Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz y Vicente Pérez Durán de Armijo. Those are the original people on the land titles in the late 1700s. And that's right after the Mexican-French War. So there's still hell going on. I can count so many times they fought for this city because it's a natural border. To get across El Paso del Norte, you have to cross the Rio Bravo. And there's the Western Occidental, Madre Occidental Mountains. So between the mountains and the underpass and the river, armies can hold you off. And that's why those forts like Fort Bliss right there in El Paso, Texas, and the border at Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua are so critical. That border can either hold off an army or not, because of its natural geographical attributes.
Mm-hmm.
So when they were coming up here, Villa wasn't coming just to scurry around in Columbus, New Mexico, but he was coming up here, and there was major water routes here, and there was a mosque here called the Santa Maria that they broke down. The anthropologists are looking for it south of the dunes of Samalayuca and Juarez, but actually it was here in Las Cruces. The significance of the Four Mary Mosque or whatever is that the cross, it's called Las Cruces for a reason, that the rivers cross here, we're on a meridian. So the meridian characteristics makes one river, the Rio Grande, flow north-south, but it made the river Alameda flow east-west. And that's the river they breached to gain the land of Doña Ana and take the Gadsden Purchase. the cities and the gates were broken. Now, these things can be verified on old needle points, and they're in the Jewish library and the Italian libraries in New York. There's 300-year-old needle points of the city, but you have to have a good eye, because whoever owns copyright, and they're the Jewish people, you can trace almost all of it back to the Jews that were working for the Mendozas under Oñate. And Oñate was just it just means loaded. Like if I asked you in Latin, how are you coming, you would say loaded with things. That's what Oñate means. But they tend to wash the name off so that you don't even know their real name by doing such things. And his name was, he was the Franciscan Jimenez de Cisneros. And Cisneros is also like cenizas, which means ashes. And Jimenez is Hemes or Hermes, which also comes from Hercules, which is the rock of Hercules. And these are here. Nobody would believe me, but the chronicles that were written by Don Pedro Gonzalo de Mendoza out of Toledo in 1625 have this information. But, you know, this is not, yeah, it's not everywhere. Took a lot to, yeah, I had to pay close attention to cities that are destroyed and still love them enough to see something that you can't see anymore, except for broken things. But they were from here. Villa was from here. Obregón was from here. Oh, they were basically from the Camino Real. They went up and down to Sonora all the way to Monterey. So Obregón's grandmother was actually up there in Monterey. She also came here as a kid during the Lincoln County Wars. Well, she was like 10 or 11. So the people that were insiders to Pancho Villa, they actually had enough information to overthrow him because of his plans for the presidency. And Obregón was to him, they shared a common grandparent. So Pancho Villa's mom, I call her the Santa Maria, the Saint Mary. You don't need to give me church. I have church. Pancho Villa's mom, I call her La Santa Maria. And her name was Isabel Varela Diaz. She was born in 1863, and she's the straight line to the Porfiriato. And that means she's a straight descendant to the Emperor Porfirio Diaz of Mexico. So you see, Villa had these inside relationships through his mom. But his dad is the famous El Fuego Baca. And El Fuego means the fire. And like I said, berry, baca is berry. So the fire berry, or the fire of the blackberry. And he's the one that took, I think, a black African wife. So the line goes black at that point. And those are the children of Jeronimo Baca. And he goes down as the famous Indian Geronimo, who changed sides so much. He's so hated. He was on every side, you know. But Villa's dad was one of the sacred trinities. And then his mother was also one of the sacred trinity. And Villa's children, when they were kidnapped in 1918, are also of the sacred trinity. Now, these are the things, these are the stories nobody tells, because there's also this attribute of power and lineage and the kidnapping of children. So Villa's children were kidnapped by Obregón's family, and they were raised by his family. And you can prove these things in pictures. So the large amount of my evidence on this are just in imagery. Yeah, but they shared a common grandparent. Obregón, Álvaro Obregón, like history gone. That's what his name means, history gone. He traces back to Peter Maxwell that was involved in the land grabs, and also Peter Madrid, that's his other fake name. And then he uses also Geronimo Jones. And if I told you he's the famous Aleister Crowley, you wouldn't believe me, but he does turn up to be Cambridge educated, born in 1878. He has ranches in Scotland. He has 7 ranches in Mexico near Zacatecas. These are very rich families. And so you can see the contradictions between what they offer the revolution when the people are involved in agrarian reform and the reality of who they are. So behind them are just large sums of money. So when you see, for example, also the Houdini character, this is going to sound crazy, but that's him too. And the assistant, if you look closely, is actually his daughter. So I can almost identify any of Eleanor Vaughn's pictures. and I actually enjoy collecting her pictures. But she was the wife of Franklin Roosevelt, and also they were cousins themselves. Yeah, if I could go on and on about the Franklin Roosevelt, but he's also a Hearst. That's the part that people don't emphasize, but he's also a Hearst. Did I get out there enough on Pancho Villa? I didn't really talk about his assassination because nobody would believe that part. I guess you'd have to buy the book when it gets done, because Villa's forgeries that he died in Parral are just forgeries. The people on the palace of Parral, Chihuahua, the people in hanging in those pictures are kidnapped children of the last Duchess of Mexico, of Monte Alban in Mexico, and also Pat Garrett. So if anybody has a good eye, they can Google the palace in Parral, Chihuahua, and they can compare Pat Garrett's pictures with those pictures, and they can see that those are forgeries. They were done in 1905. Did I lose you, Coral?
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I had it turned down for a minute because I was clearing my throat. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was starting to say something. this is going to sound funny. Did you ever read about Pancho Villa trying to, other than being in, you know, his protected status, did he ever go out and wander around, like in California? Or in, what's that town that's right over the border of Mexico?
Columbus. Well, yeah, down here, you can go to his. Oh, up there. You know what? They went back and forth. But by the time he was fighting, many people had already fled to the other side of the border. So if you consider he's born in 1883, the Gadsden Purchase has already taken place, and they're fighting for what they've lost. So when they place him in Durango, so they like the official history of Pancho Villa is that he's from I think it's, what is the name of that city? Well, they actually place him in Durango, like born in, and being from Durango, but they won't tell you that his mom was actually here and he was probably born here in Doñana. So they went back and forth at the time of the Porfiriato too. You know, and the following emperor, also Agustín Iturbide, which is from, no, he's the penultimate one. The empire's extending from like Guatemala, Honduras, and all the way up through Nevada and Canada, and all the way up to the borders of Canada. These are huge empires.
Okay.
So the Porfiriato Empire, you know, it was changing times. They were tired of Villa. So the Battle of Ciudad Juarez was in 1911, and that was to overthrow Porfirio Díaz. No more Porfiriato. They were done. But then there comes these conspirators, and it's the same thing. Like, I think there's five assassinations of whoever's in line for the president up to Pancho Villa, too. Madero, he works with Carranza. And Madero is assassinated. And then we have like Plutarco Elias Calles and Huerta. It's just the same. Well, I don't know. Mexico is a strange, to me, it's a very strange thing. I'd rather study it 130-year-old history. But if you look at it that way, yes, the armed of the Spanish Red Collars went up and down the Camino Real. So the ranches, they're like pancakes. They're not like states that we conceptualize them now. They're like pancakes. So if you follow the southern Camino Real, it'll take you into Sonora and Baja California, and that road connects all of the land. And then if you follow the upper Camino Real, it'll connect through Santa Fe all the way up to San Francisco and even higher. They traveled back and forth like nothing. And, of course, you know, then the Hearsts are from there. So Phoebe Hearst, her grandmother... Land grants are here, but Phoebe Hearst is the UC Berkeley regent.
Oh.
Yeah, so Phoebe Hearst, so yeah, they did go back and forth. And George Hearst, for example, he's the one that has the wristband match in there in Capitola that went to the Pearsons, Duncan Pearson. That is George Hearst. That is who Carlota's uncle. And there are many pictures of her with him. But he's much older than her, so they're Photoshop pictures. They had that technology. That's what also people don't understand, is they did have that technology to create falsified images. And so we think that, well, because it's 1832, wow, it has to be true. How could they do a Photoshop? But they really did do a Photoshop. And the conspirators came in against Pancho Villa. Basically, in the book, he doesn't die in Parral. That's all. That's a forgery. And, you know, we accept these things. I never meant to get stuck on the 20th century revolutionaries. But they came into the book, and they came in such a way that I had to write them in and take a closer look at what was going on between, for example, the U.S. General Funston and Pershing and the attacks on Las Cruces in 1915. They called them the attacks on the Santa Maria Isabel. That's Asarco. Those are the old mines here. So there's slight shifts in history. Funston, for example, is a U.S. Army general. These guys go straight into Hearst. Funston goes to Gangster, but it's also the Armstrongs. Mm. So I look at a lot of linguistic data. I guess that's the other thing, is that I do linguistic anthropology. So I look at the evolution of words, too, and then I look at the word nets. I also do a lot of disambiguation because of my time doing computational linguistics. So I brought my skills kind of in AI, which we do disambiguation and real-time processing of natural language artificially. And then I had to debug. So I can actually look at sets of information, and if you give me enough of the same set of information from different angles, I can debug it. So I can find the forgeries or where it kind of lipped over or left something out.
Well.
Yeah. So it's the fall of the BlackBerry house, you know, and they just broke down the stars. And the stars were the windows of the old mosque that they could open up on certain days. And I don't know a lot about them, but the more I study, the more interesting it is, because then it becomes very cross-cultural. Then you can see many cultures with the same kind of floor plans, and even the floor plans of the old mosque existed way before the Chico Tovar decided to build the mosques and the old cities of Doñana. So the old city of Doñana, that's Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. She was on the land grants in the late 1790s. They place her in the 1690s, but see, to move somebody 100 years earlier, 100, even 1,000 years earlier, also disconnects the relationship people have with the data.
How and can they do 1,000 years without, you know, making it just
incomprehensible or unsound?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, and those are just things the more you look at. Like, for example, the Pythagorean theorem was derived in the year 333. Now, where did they get that from? I'd have to go read a rock. So, but if you told me 1,333, which would put us into the high cultures of the Khans and the Chaco Canyons and the indigenous cultures pre-Hispanic, then I could say, okay. So sometimes just in general, where the information comes from is hard. So there is a lot of lost information. And I don't have exact notes on that, but I have taken notes on where the information's lost and who wrote the most of the, for example, the Greek stuff, and how they left off the women. It always seems that it's the women, too, that get left off. And in my story, it's the same thing. So I wanted to do a homage to her, but it got taken over by men. And I still can't stop talking about all these men and what they did.
Yeah. I want to wrap it up here because it's been almost 60 minutes, but stay in the phone after that, and I'll talk to you a little bit. But this is great that you got, you know, made that point that so many women's lives have just been rewritten, and it feels like that's coming forth now, and everybody's getting clear about that. Even Andrew Jackson's off the $20 bill. I don't know.
Yeah, it is a theme of the research. They keep turning into women, and the more I look at their role of women is very significant, and even the stuff that's changed over and over that we digest, like, the more I look at the data, the more it becomes clear to me too, surprises me too, because you have to, we work with what we have. So I'm also exposed to what we have, and I pick up on the on those things as well. You know, you're always kind of processing a level of error, and yeah. you keep processing so you can kind of disambiguate the error, and it leads me to the rewriting. And the one I'm rewriting now is Pancho Villa's history, and I don't even want to say it because it's so incomprehensible. Villa is so loved. He's such a loved general. He's like Abraham Lincoln, you know. History would be so different with Pancho Villa. So it's a very delicate history. I would just have people to read the book and look more at the other sources of evidences before before they get mad at me for what I say, because Pancho Villa didn't die from that assassination. That's not him in the truck and the falling out of the car. He died with the gunshot wound and from a heart attack, where he already was suffering PTSD. He was bipolar and was very ill from the trauma in his life. He was a real life person suffering mental illness.
Thank you, mm-hmm. Julia Lundgren Rodriguez. Tell us where to get the book right now.
You can get it on Amazon. The Haunting Books and the book on Billy the Kid are on Amazon. The Carla book is coming, and the Fatima book is there. So they're getting edited, but you can check them out on Amazon.
Okay, that's great. It's been wonderful talking to you.
And thank you.
Stay on.
Yes,